Marco Polo, the man who taught the world about China.
I was the greatest European traveller of my time. I journeyed to China along the Silk Road and lived there for many years in the service of Kublai Khan. I wrote a book about my travels which inspired Christopher Columbus. I was born in the city of Venice, Italy, into a rich merchant family. My father and uncle were Niccolo and Maffeo Polo, traders who bought and sold goods from different places around the world. At the time of my birth, Niccolo and Maffeo were away on a long journey and didn't return to Venice until 1269. In those days, when traders made journeys, they often didn't come home for a long time. Sometimes they died on the way and didn't come home at all. My mother died when I was young, and I was looked after by other people in my family. But I didn't meet my father and my uncle until I was 15 years old. My father and uncle told me wonderful stories about the amazing places they had visited and the people they had met on their travels. In 1253, they had sailed to Constantinople, an important city for traders from around the world. They'd stayed there for 6 years. Then they'd travel east through many countries, eventually reaching the city of Bukhara, in the country now known as Uzbekistan. At that time, Bukhara was an important city on the famous Silk Road. Niccolo and Maffeo stayed there for 3 years trading their goods. Then they met an important official who was traveling to China to meet the great and powerful Mongol ruler of China, Kublai Khan. He invited my father and uncle to go with him to China. So they set off together along the Silk Road. The Silk Road wasn't just one road, but a route made up of a number of roads between China and Europe. It was about 6,500 kilometers long and hundreds of years old. It was very important for trade, because merchants used it to bring silk, spices, jewels, and other goods from the countries of the East to Europe. The journey was long and difficult, and sometimes very dangerous. Travelers could be attacked by thieves or wild animals, or they could die from diseases. In order to protect themselves, merchants often traveled together in large groups called caravans. They rode on camels or horses, stopping from time to time along the way at places called caravanserais. Here they could find food and rest and meet other travelers. In 1264, after a long journey, my father and uncle arrived at Kublai Khan's palace in the city of Khan Balik, now known as Beijing. Kublai Khan was the grandson of the great Genghis Khan and the most powerful man in the Mongol Empire. He was very pleased to meet Niccolo and Maffeo and asked them many questions about European countries. He wanted to know about these countries' systems of politics and law and their other traditions too. My father and uncle developed a good relationship with Kublai Khan and traded successfully in China for 2 years. When they left, the Khan made them promise to return and gave them a special gold passport. This would show people that they were under the Khan's protection so that nobody would hurt them. In addition, it meant that they would be offered food and a place to stay on their journey. Kublai Khan was also very interested in the Pope, the head of the Catholic Church who lived in Rome. He asked Niccolo and Maffeo if they would take a letter to the Pope and bring back 100 priests to China who could teach mathematics and science. In addition, he asked them to bring oil from the famous Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. Niccolo and Maffeo promised to bring both the priests and the oil. As soon as they returned to Venice in 1269, they started to plan their return journey to China. I was very excited, because they'd told me that they'd take me with them. We left Venice in 1271 and sailed south to Acre, a town on the Mediterranean Sea, about 130 kilometers from Jerusalem. From there, we travelled to the church in Jerusalem and got the oil. Although we had the oil, getting the priests was more of a problem. The old pope had died, and a new one, Pope Gregory X, was now head of the Catholic Church. He sent us some letters to take to Kublai Khan, but he only sent 2 priests to go with us, not 100. Unfortunately, these priests found the journey very difficult and quickly decided to go back home. We were worried that Kublai Khan might not be pleased with us if we arrived without the priests, but we decided to continue our journey. We travelled through the countries now known as Turkey, Georgia, Iran and Iraq to Hormuz, where we were hoping to find a ship to take us to China. However, there was no suitable ship, so we continued our journey by land along the Silk Road. Along the way, I was learning valuable lessons from my father and uncle about the skill of trading. They showed me how to buy goods in some markets at a low price and then sell them in other markets at a higher price. It was especially difficult to trade in languages that I didn't understand. We journeyed on to Badakhshan, in the country now known as Afghanistan, but here I became very ill. Niccolo and Maffeo waited for many months for me to get better, but still I wasn't well enough to travel. At last, they took me away from the desert and high up into the cold air of the Pamir Mountains, where finally I began to feel well again. We continued travelling east until we came to the Gobi Desert, a huge area of sand which was very difficult to cross safely. People said that the Gobi Desert was so wide that it would take a whole year to get from one side to the other. However, we crossed it at the narrowest point, which took about a month. The desert consisted entirely of mountains and valleys and sand. It was an empty place, where there was nothing at all to eat. Finally, we got to the other side and arrived safely in the city of Suchau, the first large city after the desert, where we stayed for a year. By this time, we'd been travelling for 3 years, but we still needed to travel further east to meet Kublai Khan. At last, we reached his magnificent summer palace at Xanadu, with its beautiful parks and animals. The Khan was delighted to see us and welcomed us in a friendly way. The Khan was very pleased with the oil and the letters from the Pope. Fortunately, he wasn't angry that we hadn't been able to bring the 100 priests. He asked who I was, and from the time that I was introduced to him, he took a great interest in me. I was amazed by the wonderful things I saw at the Khan's palace and the great respect his people had for him. He got his wealth from the taxes which his people paid, and he used the money to benefit them as well as himself. Every December, the Khan moved his court to the Winter Palace in the city of Khan Balik. Khan Balik was surrounded by 4 walls, and each wall was almost 10 kilometers long. There were 12 entrances guarded by soldiers, and in the center of the city was the Winter Palace, with hundreds of rooms for the Khan and his wives. I learned to read and write the Khan's language, and several other languages too, and I became familiar with Chinese traditions. I quickly became one of the Khan's favorites, the people he liked and trusted most. I was impressed not only by the wealth and beauty of his palaces, but also by the new things I saw there, such as the use of paper money. The money was printed in a special place called the Khan's Mint and was used for trading in every corner of his empire. This was the first time I'd seen paper money, and I thought it was an excellent idea. Kublai Khan's empire produced many things, such as iron and salt, and these goods were quickly transported by large boats. There was an excellent system of communication, so that messages could be taken from place to place very quickly. There were message stations every 40 kilometers along the road, where riders on horses waited. When a rider arrived at a station with a message, another rider then took it on to the next station. In this way, a message could be carried hundreds of kilometers in a day. We decided that there were 10,000 message stations in China. Kublai Khan needed someone to travel around his huge empire and to represent him officially as his ambassador. He liked and trusted me very much. So in 1275, he asked me to visit some places in his empire and report to him what was happening. I wanted to do a good job, so I wrote down careful descriptions of everything I saw. And when I returned from my travels, the Khan was very pleased with me. During the next 17 years, I journeyed to many places for the Khan and became a very important man. I had a gold passport and fine clothes and travelled with many servants. I visited the countries now known as Burma, India, Vietnam and Sri Lanka. In addition, from 1282 to 1287, I was the governor of the city of Yangshou, which was a great honour. But after 17 years, although we'd greatly enjoyed our time in China, my father and uncle were keen to go home to Venice. We'd enjoyed a very good relationship with the Khan for many years, but now he was an old man, and Niccolo and Maffeo were worried about what would happen to us after he died. They knew that some people at his court were jealous of us, and they were afraid that these people might become our enemies. However, every time we asked the Khan if we could leave and go back to Venice, he refused to let us go. At last our chance came in 1292, when the Khan asked us to accompany a beautiful princess to Kerman in Persia, the country now known as Iran. The ruler of the Mongol Empire in Persia was looking for a wife, and the Khan had agreed to send him a princess from his court. The Khan ordered us to accompany the princess to Kerman and take her to her future husband. He gave us permission to continue on to Venice, but after that, he made us promise to return to China. We agreed, and in 1292, we set sail from the city of Zaitun with a fleet of 14 large ships. But the journey took 2 years and was very difficult and dangerous. Our ships often ran into bad weather, and many people died because of storms, accidents, or diseases. At last, we reached Kerman, where we said goodbye to the princess. Then we set off for Venice. But on the way we received the sad news that Kublai Khan had died. We realized that this was the end of our travels to China, because we could never live there safely without the protection of the great Khan. So we continued our journey home and arrived back in Venice in 1295, after 24 years. I'd been a young boy of 17 when I first left Venice, and now I was a man of 41. It had been so many years since we left that our families believed that we were dead, and they didn't recognize us. But we'd brought back jewels and gold from our travels, and we were now very rich merchants. We found that the Italian cities of Venice and Genoa were at war. They were fighting about trade routes in the Mediterranean Sea. I fought for Venice, and in 1298 I was taken prisoner by the Genoans and put in prison. There I met a man called Rustichello da Pisa. We became good friends, and I told him about my adventures. Rustichello wrote down my story in a book, which was later called, in English, The Travels of Marco Polo. and was read by many people, including Christopher Columbus. After I was released from prison in August 1299, I realized that my travels were over, and it was time to begin a new life at home. So I started a trading company with my father and married Donata Badua, the daughter of a rich merchant. Later, Donata and I had three daughters. I lived peacefully in Venice until my death from an illness in 1324, at the age of 70.